The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
This is from the record of Layman Pong. One day, the layman was sitting in his thatched cottage. Difficult, he suddenly said, like trying to scatter 10 measures of sesame seed all over a tree. Easy, returned Mrs. Pong. Just like touching your feet to the ground when you get out of bed. Neither difficult nor easy, said Ling Chao. On the 100 grass tips, the ancestor's meaning. So we're in it now. There is something that comes closer, becomes more possible with sustained practice. That's why intensives such as this are important in most of the practice-based schools of Buddhism. When we have the opportunity to immerse ourselves and with just slight voyages off the cushion, but to stay close. Difficult, the layman said. There's something to be said for being told this in advance. And the teachings make no do not apologize, do not conceal the fact that it is a long path and there will be many challenges along the way. And I think there's something very refreshing in that. True speech. At the same time, sometimes being told something will be difficult can set up something in the mind, something that is expectant. When I was in college, I was in a school orchestra, and we had our regular conductor was not a great conductor. He was very wishy-washy about everything, kind of. And when we were getting ready for a performance, he would get up there and say, well, you know, this is kind of a hard piece, you know, but let's just give it our shot, you know. And that's what he got. And then once a year, we had a guest conductor who was another teacher at the school, was excellent, but he was a choral conductor, so just once a year he would conduct the orchestra. And he would get up and just say, okay, we're doing this. And that's what he got. A different orchestra, a different group of musicians, same people. Ascending the mountain training. So yeah, it becomes pretty clear pretty early that it's not going to be a cakewalk. That whatever great plans we have made are just going to have to be put away. And that's okay. You know, the challenge really is when our expectations meet reality, can we yield? Can we yield to reality and turn towards that and give up all of our easy dreams? So we meet our habits, our tendencies, our memories, our reactivity, our regrets, our insecurities. We see our attachments are stronger than we thought. And we keep seeing that. They seem to keep being stronger than we thought. Faith seems to come and go. Our energy rises and falls. And there's a kind of maturing, a kind of seasoning that happens When you sit in one place and watch yourself go through all of those changes. Because we're just so used to just change the condition, change the environment, change my what I'm looking at, change what I'm doing. And when you're just sitting here on this cushion and your world just keeps showing up and showing you, showing each of us, and you don't go away. You don't fly away. It's hard to recognize in the beginning. It's maybe as good analogy is like when we're young, you know, kids growing up, going through stuff, you know, and we just see it as this, you know, just what's happening right now. This heartbreak, this triumph, this contest, this whatever. We don't see it within this large view that each of those experiences is teaching us something, presenting us with something. We're learning about life. We're learning how to be a person, how to live. But we don't have that big picture, right? We realize how labile everything is, how, in a sense, the things we've been relying on for so long are just really not reliable. Not for what we actually want, not what we're seeking. So, you know, there's the Vimalakirti Sutra, which is this sort of large and perfect embodiment of a fully realized being, free in every situation, having realized every dharma in a layperson. But it's fictional, right? Vimalakirti was not ever an historical person, but Layman Pong was. He studied with different teachers, 8th century, Shitao, Matsu. There's a somewhat known about him. He had a family. He also had a son who I think was an artist. doesn't usually get included because he was off doing his own thing. You got to have one of those, right? But the family, and particularly Layman Pong and Ling Chao, they seem to be particularly close. But they were all practitioners, and according to the records, they were all realized. So that's a nice family to be born into. And it's said that I've never seen what he did in his life to make his livelihood, but at a certain point when he got really involved in the Dharma, he thought, this is just, you know, a hotbed of attachments. So he put all of his stuff in a boat and took it out of the lake and sunk it, because he didn't want anybody else to have it either. No comment on how the family felt about that, but it's a done deal. And then he spent a lot of time wandering. Towards the end of his life, he lived in a cave for a while. And there are different records of his teachings, and this is one of them. Difficult, 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 like trying to spread bushels of sesame seed all over a tree. So he's making it clear. It's difficult, right, what we're trying to do. The habits of a lifetime, lifetimes, deeply embedded. And in a sense, to a certain extent, instinctual, right? When you see when something's painful, get away. When something's pleasurable, go towards it. Hold on to what you don't want to lose. When somebody makes you angry, get angry back. If there's a problem out there that's causing you distress, see if you can change it. Conquer it. Get away from it. When you're experiencing difficulty, do something to change that. When you don't feel good, when you don't like what you're feeling, add meaning to it. It means something. What does it mean? And so whether it's a person or a family or a community or a nation or a world, samsara finds its way into. Wherever we are. So an old teacher said, is there anyone who can find a true path home? A true path. In Buddhism, a path means something very particular. It's not just, well, everybody's on a path. Some of them work, some of them don't. No, that's not how it's seen in Buddhism. It's very intentional. It's based in what is true. And it's a path. It's not just a random road going somewhere. It's a path that is eightfold and noble, right? You are given provisions. We are given provisions, guides. And then, as the Buddha said, he could only point, and then we have to find our way. We have to find our way. Like when Hweka came to Bodhidharma, my mind is not at peace. Please set it at peace. He wanted nothing more in the world than that. And Bodhidharma said, bring it to me. This mind that is in turmoil, that is tormenting you, that brought you to this very place, bring that very mind to you. That should not be hard. And then he left it to Hweka to find that mind. But of course, the difficulties don't begin when we enter practice. If they did, we probably wouldn't be here. But they often seem to increase. They seem to get worse somehow, or more, or bigger. And actually, that's a good sign. It's a sign that we're looking, we're paying attention. We're not turning away. Not too much. We can think that, because we, you know, in a dual world, we think everything works like a machine. And so walking a path means every foot takes you one step further, one step closer to your goal, and you can track your distance, right? Get an odometer, get a map. You can track exactly where you are. And you know how far you are from the beginning and how far you are from the end. And there is a beginning and there is an end. Not this one. And so we can think in that way of thinking that every step is not only going to get us closer, but it's going to get easier. Right? Because it's a path of liberation. We should be liberating ourselves. Right? Would anyone disagree? And so, but then when we go through these, we see these moments of burst, right? Everything's fine, then everything's fine, and then, and we think, okay, you know, in the beginning, I can handle that. But then at a certain point, we think, okay, I've done that. No more of that. Now I'm just smooth sailing. And hearing that, we can think, okay, so it's not really working. Right? The same stuff keeps happening. No, not really. It's not the same. Because the stuff of it is not in the... It's in my mind. What do I see? How do I respond? How do I understand this? That's not the same. And so those outbursts keep happening, but they're not the same. And yet, you know, they still require attention. Sometimes they throw us back a bit. And so we establish intention, raise our aspiration, keep going, don't be afraid. Now, I've often said, it's easy to get lost. That doesn't take a lot of skill, right? In fact, you probably have, you probably will. Everybody gets lost for a moment, for a day, for months, sometimes for years. Sometimes forever. There are those who are lost and do not find their way back, not in this lifetime. They're not looking. And so how to walk a path takes skill. That's what we're developing, skill. It's not just learning how to meditate and making sure you get to the cushion sufficiently or chanting a sutra or reading some texts. It's a whole thing going on. And we have to learn how to do that, just like the child has to learn how to be a human being, how to be in the world. I was listening recently to an educator. An interviewer was talking to them about, in this section, about AI. And she said, you know, children need to learn they need to do things that are difficult. They have to learn things that are hard to learn. And they have to go through that struggle of trying to learn something that's not easy, right? It may not even seem relevant or important. I mean, I'm sure we all had experiences when we were in school, like, what's the point? This doesn't interest me. This is no good for me. I don't care about this. I'm never going to use this. And that may be true about the subject, but that's also looking in a very, very narrow way, but that when we have to learn or stay with something, engage something, and really try, that's difficult, we're learning a whole lot more than just whatever the subject is. And she was talking about when AI came into the schools, you know, that the teachers were like, okay, we have to have anti-plagiarism tools. And the kids like immediately learned how to hack that, get around it. And so she was saying, we're never gonna beat the kids on this in terms of creating something that they can't get around. And I was thinking, right. So maybe that's not the point. The point is, how do you teach a child to not want to get around it? How do we learn to want to learn? Even if the subject isn't easy, and the person that she was interviewing was saying, you know, I was that kid. I thought school was boring. I didn't like it. I struggled with it. But then they had some encounters that inspired them, and they really got very interested in one thing. And he really studied this one thing, and his life and his whole relationship with learning began to change. And then he said, and then he went back to some of those other subjects that he'd hated and thought were stupid and irrelevant, and he realized he could study those now. He had learned something that transcended just the subject itself. Practice is a lot like that. And so we need to free ourselves from the idea that because something is difficult or painful, it's bad. And if it's easy or pleasurable, it's good. I've been rereading Righteous Mind by Jonathan Haidt, and he was talking about how in all these experiments that they've done about just how people make decisions and sort of the relationship between the emotional aspect, you know, or the feeling that guides us versus the intellect, which rationalizes. And that people basically believe that if I'm feeling good about something, that must mean I like it. And if I don't feel good about something, that must mean I don't like it. Right? So clearly, as practitioners, we have to get beyond that, or else we'll never practice. They did an experiment where somebody was on the street asking passersby, a series of questions that had a moral component to it, and asking them for their opinion, you know, to sort of make a moral judgment. And they were standing next to a trash can. And with some of the people, the trash can was just empty. They'd ask the question, people would respond, make a moral judgment, and then pass on. And other people, that before the person came up, the interviewer would spray what they called fart spray into the trash can, right? So the person comes up and the air is like filled with this fart spray. And that they found that people still made moral judgments, but they were much harsher, right? And so how a person is feeling, right, affects their judgment, their sort of reaction, their mood, their temperament, their attitude. In the Prajnaparamita Sutra, Subhuti and Shariputra are having a little chat one day about the Dharma. Shariputra says, Venerable Subhuti, the supreme enlightenment is hard to come by. Hard, difficult, difficult, difficult. Why? In the same way that it does not occur to space, I shall know enlightenment. Space doesn't think I shall know enlightenment. Just so it doesn't occur to the bodhisattva, I shall know enlightenment. Why? Because the same as space are all dharmas. And it is after they have firmly believed in all dharmas as the same as space that the bodhisattva knows full enlightenment. So when the bodhisattva understands, has faith in, that all things are empty, nothing is fixed, they can't get it. It's not a thing. Right? They can't just set a goal and move towards that. It's not a treasure hunt. Right? There's a treasure there, and it's hidden somewhere, but if you get to it, you'll find that treasure, and you'll have it, like that many jewel in the claw of the dragon. He said, once the bodhisattva understands that, then they realize how difficult this is going to be, because it's not a thing. If the, on the part of the bodhisattva, who has firmly believed that all dharmas are the same as space, the supreme enlightenments were easy to win, not hard to come by, then bodhisattvas countless as the sands of the Ganges would not turn away from an enlightenment and would easily attain it. So in this way, it's difficult, 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 because it's very nature. If it were just, you know, an answer, a question is asked, you have to figure out the question, the answer, like an exam, a test. It's the ultimate test, right? But you just have to figure out the answer. Use your mind. Then we would do that. But it's not that, because all dharmas are the same as space. Of course, we don't experience them that way. We experience them as having weight, as having solidity, this emotion, this memory, this sensation, this action, this person, this mood. It feels so real, not just in the sense that I'm experiencing something, but in the sense that it is something that is happening to me. And that's why the bodhisattva does not think, I will know enlightenment. That's, we have to give that up. It is something that I will know, I will attain. It is not like that. Dr. Roshi used to often say, it is not like something. But then Mrs. Pong says, easy, easy, easy. Like touching your feet on the ground when you get out of bed. The supreme way is not difficult if only you do not pick and choose. Just like your feet touching the ground when you get out of bed. You don't have to think about it, plan, prepare. You're already home. And there's no step that's going to bring you closer. Easy, easy, easy. The obstacles are not as they appear. When something arises, it's something. It has qualities and characteristics. That's how we can recognize it. It's got meaning. It's got a story. We have a story about it. We have a relationship with it. This isn't the first time. Even if we haven't seen this one, we've seen a lot of other ones that are like this one. So we throw them all into the same box. We know it. And in that moment of knowing, it feels good. Or in that moment of knowing, this doesn't feel good at all. I like this. I don't like this. This is good. This is not good. And so there seems to be a whole lot going on in that object. That's where the qualities and characteristics are. I was fine until it arose, and now look what's happening. So the evidence seems to be that that object has got something going on. It's doing something to me. I want more of it. I don't want any of it. So deal with the object. Get it. Possess it. Get rid of it. And so the radical faith of practice is realize there's something there, not what we think, but what we really need to do is turn around. Turn it around. It's not about the object. It's this mind, it's this moment, it's this response, it's this clinging, it's this rejecting, it's this body, it's this emotion. In that way, the object is just, in a way, a friend, right? Helping to show the self arise so that we can see. Stop and see. Easy, easy, easy. In the same way that if we want to be a compassionate person and live a compassionate life, the way that happens is by being compassionate and living compassionately. You know, it's not like we can do some sort of, you know, stuff over here, and then one day we're just going to boing, be compassionate, right? We actually have to be bringing forth, being that very thing, practicing that. And so that's what we do. That's why we need to be practicing compassion in our zazen. There's virtually almost no element of the Dharma which is in which morality, good and bad, in our way of seeing it, isn't present, isn't needing our attention. And in the same way, if we want to live a life that is, you know, awake and aware and mindful, then we have to be mindful. If we want to live an enlightened life, then we have to be an enlightened being. Well, now that, hang on. Now that seems a lot harder, right? How can we be an enlightened being on the path of enlightenment when we're not enlightened? By bringing forth the mind, the qualities, the aspiration, the virtues of an enlightened being. The precepts, the paramitas, the practice. And so when we meet the moment in love and hate and grasping and rejecting and our opinions and, you know, our habits, well, that's not quite it. When those things just arise impulsively, without asking, and we respond, right, with awareness, with compassion, with mindfulness. Those are enlightened qualities. And if the burden is light, then you carry it lightly. If it's heavy, you carry it heavily. Don't complain. Don't complain. Don't compare. Ooh, now wait a minute. Don't speculate. Don't strategize. Four tough asks, right? Because we love these things. You know, somebody was asking about, it's easier, you know, to let go of things that are painful, come back to their practice. But when it's pleasurable, it's hard to let go of that because you're getting pleasure right now. It's happening. You're enjoying this. It's good. Feels good. You must like it. It must be good. It's hard to let go of that consciously and return to a practice that may not be those things yet. It's not bringing forth all those wonderful descriptions, radiant, luminous, blissful, equanimous, liberated. It's just the breath. Right? So you're going to let go, wow, come back to the breath, right? That's not what we would normally do. We would normally stay with the good thing, the fun thing, the I like thing. And so that's where being able to practice what in that moment is difficult. It can sound very trivial, but in that moment, it can be hard. Towards the end of the ox herding picture, depiction of the journey, the ox self transcended. The poem says, astride the ox, I reach home. I'm serene. The bull, too, can rest now. The dawn has come in blissful repose. Within my thatched dwelling, I've abandoned the whip and ropes. Right? All of those practices, those efforts, those struggles have eased. There's nothing we meet that really is new. I mean, that's not entirely true. We do experience new things in meditation. But in terms of, you know, the habitual mind, the conditioned mind, the karmic mind, I mean, come on, really? I don't... Maybe. Now and then. Doesn't really matter. But the point is, we get so surprised. You know, we fall into a habit. We've fallen into it 1,000 times, 10,000 times, right here in Sesshin. And yet, boom, it's like, what? Swept away. So if you can let go, let go. If you can't let go, if you won't let go, know that you won't let go. Know that you're not letting go. Just know that. Don't write a like thesis on it. Just know that. If your faith is strong, practice with a strong faith. If it's dim, practice with a dim faith. There's no situation, as long as you have your mind, in which practice cannot occur. And it will be different. It will be different. We need those differences. We need to go through all of those different conditions and situations in order to develop, in order to learn how to live in this world, which is continually throwing stuff at us, near and far. And to study without investment. Great aspiration, but not invested. Hold no opinion. And recognize that all of this that's arising is just arising. It's just a moment. It's not you. It's not permanent. Don't take it lightly, as Dogen says, but don't add weight to it. It's not the self. It's just an event. We're not only event planners, we're event makers. We're making events all the time. But if we see it as just an event, and it's gone. In the Prajnaparamita, Subhuti said, the Buddha has said that it's hard to come up to the supreme enlightenment, and that is said over and over again in this sutra, how difficult it is, how deep it is. So he's just acknowledging that. But then Subhuti, and of course Subhuti and Shakyamuni are both very, you know, prominent disciples of the Buddha. Subhuti says, as I, however, understand the meaning of the Buddha's teaching, and as I think it out for myself, easy to win is the supreme enlightenment. Easy, easy, easy. Why? No one fully knows. By no one is anything fully known, and there is nothing that should be fully known. For the Buddha, all dharmas are empty. And when all dharmas are empty, that dharma does not exist which would fully know, or by which one would fully know, or which one would fully know. They cannot be grasped. For all dharmas are empty. And because of this, easy to win is the great enlightenment, because they're empty. It's exactly what Subhuti was saying, or Shariputra was saying. But they're just looking at it from a different perspective. That's all. Same reality, same teaching, same truth. Because it's empty, it is difficult. It is difficult to take this grasping mind, this object-seeking mind, this self-seeking other on this path, which needs to have a beginning and an end. It's difficult. But because it cannot be grasped, then what is it that I'm attaching to? why is it that this emotion has such an influence on me, has such power over me, if it has no power of its own? I was listening to a teacher talk about, it was Alan Wallace, and he was using his cell phone. And he picked it up and he looked at it back. He said, there's a dent on the back. Oh, shit. It was so beautiful before. It was perfect. It was brand new. And it's got a dent in it. How did that happen? Now it's dented. It's broken. It's not the same. I can't enjoy it because it still works, but every time I pick it up, I just see that dent. I can't see anything else. And he went on for a while. Right? Very simple. Trivial example. Maybe not so trivial. And then he said, if the power was in the dent, and that's what was making me miserable, then I could turn it on you. You'd all be miserable. Right? Because it's easy, it's empty. Because it's empty, it's easy. And then Ling Chao has the last word. Neither difficult nor easy. On the 100 grass tips, the ancestors meaning, on the tip of a grass, on the tip of every blade of grass, the truth of this Dharma. Well, what is that? Neither easy nor difficult. We can think of the instruction or the teaching about not having an opinion, not grasping or rejecting, not naming, all these foundational, reactive, deeply habitual things that we do. I remember I was working on this dairy farm in upstate many years ago. I was sitting one morning before I went in to work the cows. And I was noticing my impulsive mind to name everything, to identify everything that came up. You know. And I remember thinking, I guess that's going to always be there. You know, I mean, I couldn't imagine that my mind wouldn't do that at some point, because it was just so consistent, so reliable, right? And then that started to change, right? It started to drop away, it started to get softer, it started not to be so reflexive. And so when we don't engage in those simple actions that actually have very deep roots, naming, opinion, judging, grasping, rejecting, all of those things are strengthening our suffering, strengthening the very things that we're trying to free ourselves of. And so when we relax those, and when we relax the sense that you are doing something, you are holding on, you are rejecting, you have an opinion, you are comparing, you are meditating, your concentration is getting stronger, your mind is distracted. None of that is necessary in order to practice, in order to see, be alert, and practice well. And the less that that self is brought forward, I am, I am, I am, I am, the less the self is brought forward. Long before it's realized, that self is becoming quiet. And that's the essence of an enlightened being. And so we are bringing forth enlightened mind when we allow that self-consciousness, that self-witnessing, that self naming. And when it does arise, don't make a big deal about it. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't have any power. It's not a problem. So when you just meet, it's like as one of many sensations. It arises, it's gone. It arises, it's gone. Later in the sutra, a couple pages later, Subhuti says, well, how then should a bodhisattva practice? How should we go forth? And the Buddha makes it very clear. It's very simple. If you want to know full enlightenment, behave towards beings with an even mind. With an even mind. Don't produce an uneven mind. A mind that is dull, apathetic, asleep, and don't produce a mind that is agitated, volatile. Bring forth a thought of benefit towards all beings. In other words, generate intentions, desires, thoughts, citta, to be a benefit towards others. A thought that is free from aversion. Treat each person as though they were your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, your friend, your child, your relative, your neighbor, people you depend upon, people you care about. Become a person who abstains from taking life, from stealing, from clouding your mind, and so on. In other words, practice in accord with the precepts. Practice as a Buddha. Practice the paramitas. Give. Give. Doesn't matter what you give. Doesn't have to be something. When we want to bring forth thoughts of benefit, we want to be giving, then we cultivate a mind and a heart that has that kind of generosity, magnanimity, patience, vigor, concentration. Develop the practices, your mindfulness, the Buddha says. Practice the great friendliness and the great compassion, the four measurables. In other words, engage in the practices that have come down to us, that have been transmitted. Understand the Four Noble Truths. Understand dukkha. Relinquish attachments. Realize the nature of your mind and follow the path. And do all of this, the Buddha says, without taking a basis in anything. Without turning any of this into something fixed, solid, graspable, something to gain, something to lose, something that has its own power. In other words, practice as an enlightened being. Within faith, within understanding, and in time through direct experience, that there is nothing that is eternal, except that which is never born. There is nothing that we can actually grasp in our mind other than our mind. There is no obstacle that we're experiencing that is actually external to ourselves and doing something to us. There is adversity. There are difficult situations, absolutely. Buddhism has never denied that. The world is filled with them and filled with people making them. And sometimes we're that person. The path is not about living in a fantasy world, but it's that whatever those conditions are, whatever the moment is, whatever this day is, you have a mind and a path that is fundamentally in and of itself free, unbound. But we have to train. We have to train that mind, develop it, bring it forth, make it happy. One day, Layman Pong and Ling Zhao were out selling bamboo baskets. They were coming down off a bridge and he stumbled and fell. When she saw it, she ran and threw herself down next to him. And her father said, "What are you doing?" And she said, I saw Papa fall to the ground, so I'm helping him. And he said, ah, thank goodness no one was looking.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.